This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We've got another 60 minutes of classic radio crime for you this Wednesday. We'll start off with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. His story from October 29th, 1949, titled The Little Man Who Wasn't There. After that, it's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and Mr. Walker's Problem. His story from March 28th, 1952.
If you're looking for murder, I know a guy who can get it for you wholesale. This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar, starring Charles Russell. At insurance investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he's an absolute genius. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to West Coast Underwriters, San Francisco Branch. Attention, Bradford L. Coates, General Manager. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my investigation of the little man who wasn't all there, or in most cases, there at all, or the unpaid premium payoff. Expense account, item one, 3 cents postage due on your airmail special delivery letter containing said assignment. I can just hear you dictating it.
Take a letter to Johnny Dollar. You'll find his address in the files. Dear sir, better make that dear Dollar. Enclosed fine copies of letters received by us from one Mr. James Yarbo, period. This man's wife was insured with our company until recently. One day before her death, her period of grace and an unpaid premium ran out. We canceled her policy in the amount of $20,000. Her husband, Yarbo, first made every effort to collect, then threatened us. Since then, we've received the enclosed series of letters intimating, without confessing, that he's had a hand in the accidental death of at least 12 of our policyholders to date. The police have been working on it, but are getting nowhere. If you are available, please come immediately. Yours very truly, Sophie.
Expense account, item two, $176.87. Airfare, Hartford to San Francisco. Item three, $5.40. Cab fare, airport to your office.
Dollar, glad you got him. You've no idea what
okay,
a mess
this whole thing is. Okay, Mr. Coates, okay, don't get excited. We'll nail this guy before you run out of policyholders.
Well, the dozen he's apparently done away with already have cost us darn near $250,000. You've got to move fast, Dollar. The man is a homicidal maniac.
Yeah, but a smart one, though. He's put just enough in those letters that he sent you to let you know that he's working on a grand-scale revenge against your company. But he leaves out just enough so the law can't lock him up.
He's had perfect alibis in every case.
Mr. Coates, tell me, have all these deaths been local, right around here?
No, they've been all over California.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, the method. From this list you gave me, Mr. Yarbo seems to have a preference for killing people through the noisy and gory method of fake automobile accidents.
Yes, very true. But what about this last one? Airplane crash. That was a $30,000 loss to us. Just think, our poor innocent policyholder flying around and then his engine quit. Thanks to a man he's never even seen.
Tell me, Mr. Coates, just how difficult would it be to get a list of your California policyholders? Names and addresses, you know.
Why, that would take days, but goodness gracious, man, you can't hope to keep an eye on them all. Besides, the minute you went off the job, he'd strike again. That's a preposterous
Whoa,
idea.
Cut time. Look, I don't want the list. I was just wondering how Yarbo got it.
Oh.
Now, so far, you've given me nothing to go on. I'd like you to add two things to that. Yarbo's home address and a $50,000 life insurance policy made out to me.
What on earth's that for?
Well, look, in the first place, if we're going fishing for Mr. Yarbo, I might as well be the worm. In the second place, if I should get gobbled up in the line of duty, that $50,000 life insurance would make several attractive young ladies of my acquaintance very happy. Not, mind you, as happy as I can make them by remaining alive. Expense account, item four, $30. Rental of limousine complete with chauffeur. I figured if I was riding into trouble, I was riding in style. So I started on a house-to-house survey. You might say, knocking at death's door.
Yes. What is to the police?
Oh, I'm sorry to bother you, Mrs. Cianelli, but I'm from the insurance company.
Oh, yes.
It'll only take a moment. One question about your son.
Oh, poor Angelo. What do you want to know about my poor son? He drove away in his automobile. That's all. I'll never see him alive again.
Yes, I know. Tell me, Mrs. Cianelli, did you ever hear your son mention a man named Yarbo?
Yarbo?
Yeah.
Yarbo. I don't know about no such Yarbo. Now, please. Please believe me. There was so much sadness in my house.
Yes?
Mr. Dykes?
Yes.
I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm from the insurance company. About your son's plane crash.
Oh. Thought all those details had been taken care of.
But just one thing, Mr. Dykes. Did your son ever mention a man named Yarbo?
Yarbo?
Yeah.
That's an unusual name. I'm sure if he had, I would have remembered.
Okay, sir. I'm sorry to bother you. And thanks.
Yes, sir. May I help you?
Yes, I'd like to have a word with Mrs. Weatherly. I'm from the insurance company.
Well, sir, Mrs. Weatherly has been indisposed, not receiving visitors.
What is it, Brian?
How do you do, Mrs. Weatherly? My name is Johnny Dollar.
Oh, dear, dear. You may go, Brian. Oh, I'm ashamed to let you see me in this condition, Mr. Dollar. Just ashamed. But you understand.
I do indeed.
Oh, it was bad enough. The accident, I mean. But the scandal! Oh, I'll never be able to hold my head up again.
Yes. No.
If Harvey had to get himself in an automobile accident, why, oh, why, I ask you, did he have to have that awful Mrs. Barclay in the car?
Hmm? Oh, yes. Yes, it was very unthoughtful of him, yes. Mrs. Weatherly. Would you mind answering one question?
Well, if I can.
Did your husband ever mention a man named Yarbo?
Well, no. No, he never mentioned a man named Yarbo. But neither did he ever mention Mrs. Barclay.
I tried a half a dozen of the other beneficiaries left behind by Mr. Yarbo's list of victims. All I got out of it was a very watery afternoon. The tears were falling like monsoon time in Burma. But of information, I got none. This brought me right smack up to a point I didn't want to have to reach. The point of contacting Mr. Yarbo in person. At 8:30 that night, I took a plan on Yarbo's house on Lombard Street. At 11:30, I saw the lights go out, as did Yarbo. He was a little guy, stooped over like he was looking for cigarette butts on a sidewalk, needing a haircut, and, true to type, wearing a long black overcoat. But worst of all was the little satchel he was carrying. Items like this always set off a chain reaction in my imagination, and I could just see him on his way to atomizing the Oakland Bay Bridge, thus causing the biggest automobile accident in history. I very cleverly forced my way into the house by breaking a first-floor window, reaching in and opening same. Cyclops eye of my flashlight started picking up information on the subject of Mr. Yarbo immediately. The room I had entered looked like the Hobby Lobby of an English bobby, a crime museum if I ever saw one. On one wall, a gun case. On another, a crime library. And scattered around the room, a grisly collection, ranging from blood-stained hatchets to shrunken heads. But the most surprising criminal curio of all stood right behind me. Mr. Yarbo, complete with little black bag.
Well, well, I must say, the current second story man dresses well, but I must also say you, my man, must have the old masters of the art turning in their graves. For you, young man, are a heavy-fingered bungler. Sir, let's have a better look at you. Now that flashlight, I'll feel better after you have dropped it.
Hey, what am I doing? You're not even pointing a gun at me.
Don't feel too comfortable. You are well covered from many points. A step from you in any direction may detonate any number of explosive devices.
Why did I have to pick this joint to burgle? I feel like a city councilman playing a call in the White House. You seem more the kind of a guy I should be working for instead of on. What's your racket?
Racket? Yeah. You were in a racket, my little friend. My pastime is a science. Yes, I take it you are impressed with my collection.
Who wouldn't be?
Well, if you're interested, come here.
About those booby traps.
Oh, yes. Note well the design in the rug. The large roses. Avoid stepping on them for the time being.
Oh, great. And I was in here stumbling around in the dark.
May your good luck continue. But look here in this case. The small vial on the right. That was purloined for me to order from the famous Black Museum in Scotland Yard. That little vial once rested in the case of the fabulous murderer, Dr. Crippen. And there, beside it, that lock of hair, that is from the head of the second victim of the noted mass murderer, Neil Cream. And up there, look up there, the hangman's noose over the mantle from that once swung the body of the notorious Western bad woman, Fanny Turner.
How's chances for running this place for Halloween?
Well, all right then, since you no longer seem interested in playing the part of a bungling burglar, then I assume that I am also free to discontinue my pose as a victim of your disguise. Mr. Johnny Dollar.
Oh. Ah, looks like the chips are down and I'm the fish.
Yes. And there are a lot of other fish in your sea, Mr. Dollar. Poison, eels, that's what you are, the lot of you. Parasites, gambling on death, and then not paying when you lose.
Listen, Mr. Yarbo, you're placing a big hunk of blame where it doesn't belong. You're confused about this.
Confused?
Yes. When your wife's insurance premium was overdue, you were allowed a 30-day period of grace. And when that went by, the policy was canceled. Now, that's not the insurance company's fault. It was your fault.
But it wasn't. I gave her the money. She spent it on herself. I'd have made it up. I told them so after she died. I told them, but they wouldn't listen. I'll show you.
Yarbo looked like he was headed to show me the chopping end of an axe laying on top of a small table. I hit him just as he hit the table. As he hit the floor, I noticed what I was standing on. One of those big red roses in the carpet. It hadn't exploded yet, but that was one flower I wasn't standing around waiting to see bloom. It took a lot of nerve picking up a telephone in that room. But I finally got a good hold on my nerves and a fair hold on an imitation of Yarbo's voice. Took one deep breath and picked up the phone. Yes?
I'm at the office. I have good news. Two more. Mr. and Mrs. Granville Morse, killed tonight on the Great Highway, 2 miles south of Seal Rock. 8:45 tonight. Ran into a post, both killed. Insured for a total of 80,000. I gotta go now. Goodbye, Jay.
Well, congratulations, Brother Yarbo. Two more at 8:45 tonight. And who's your new alibi? Me.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Johnny Dollar. But first, did you ever think of "and" as a comedy word? Maybe not, but you'll get a full demonstration on CBS this Wednesday night. There'll be Groucho Marx and his guest on that hilarious quiz, You Bet Your Life. For it's the guests who sometimes floor Groucho with their wisecracks. There'll be Bing Crosby in his regular Wednesday night CBS show and his special guest, Bob Hope. There'll be George Burns and Gracie Allen and Bill Goodwin. And becomes more filled with comedy when you learn that Lum and Abner will have their premiere as Wednesday night regulars on most of these same CBS stations. Yes, this fall, you hear them all on C and B and S. Now, with our star, Charles Russell, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Yarbo might have been lying unconscious on the floor, but in that setting, I was still afraid of him.
I'd have looked the place over with a fine tooth comb, only having none, I used my hands. I put the pat chest to Yarbo's pockets for a gun. It was unloaded. Then turned my attention to the little black bag he'd been carrying when I saw him leave the house, and which he still had with him when he returned. I hoped it wasn't booby-trapped. Opened it, and discovered that it was a trap, the type my kind of booby stepped into. Inside the bag was a small radio receiver, tuned to something I looked for and found in the room. A small radio transmitter, of the type formerly used in army tanks. Through this, Yarbo had heard me enter his little museum of murder and had returned to catch me in the act of prowling the premises. About then, I caught him in the act of coming too. Well, welcome home, Yarbo. Time to get up. I just had a long chat on the phone with Martha. She thought I was you.
You think you're very clever, don't you? Martha knows my voice. If she talked to you at all, she didn't tell you anything. Of that I am sure, so save your breath. There is no use your telling me she gave you any information.
Oh, no, you've got me wrong, pal. I only told you Martha called to let you know I know there is a Martha. I figured it might make you nervous, and nervous men are easy to beat.
Other nervous men may be easy to beat, Dollar, but not James Yarbo. The police have tried, and they couldn't prove a thing against me. Now, may I have your permission to get up?
Yeah. Maybe the police haven't been able to get anything on you, but I have something. Attempted murder. The hatchet you went for.
The pitiful mistake of a pitifully suspicious mind, Dollar. I wasn't reaching for that hatchet on the table. I was trying to show you something in the table drawer. There it is, spilled out on the floor. My wife's insurance policy. The one your unscrupulous thieving superiors refused to pay. The vampires? Here, look at it. All in order. Much of it in fine print. Fine. Just fine.
Okay, Yarbo, that did it. Come on, ahead of me.
Where are we going?
To find some place to lock you up. I was hired to stop you, and until I do, I'm at least going to try and slow you down. Now move. Linen closet. No room here. Come on. In a bathroom. No window. Yeah, this'll do. Go on, get in there.
No, not in here. Anywhere but in here.
It's a good place. You may get thirsty.
No. This is where my wife died. Not in here. No.
Which, on the surface, may seem to have been a move on the cruel side. But Yarbo was a man obviously off his rocker, and I needed him more nervous than I already had him. Too nervous to attempt killing any more people. Expense account item 5, a nickel. Phone call, downtown office, state police. Mr. and Mrs. Granville Morse had indeed crashed to their death on the great highway south of Seal Rock at 8:45, which made the lady with the early telephone news flash, Martha, a gal with whom I wanted an early date. Come on, answer the phone.
Hello? What is
this? Hello, Mr. Coates. This is Dollar.
Yes, Dollar. What do you want?
Well, first I want to tell you that you just lost two more policyholders. List price, $80,000.
Oh, good Lord. This is terrible. Who, how, what...
Never mind that. I've also got something else on the good side. I need your help tonight.
Of course. Anything. What can I do?
Meet me at your office. You and I are going to go looking for a dame named Martha.
Martha? Martha who?
I don't know, but I hope she works for you.
I'll be there in a half hour.
Make that 20 minutes, and you'll be 10 minutes closer to happy days. The office personnel records of the West Coast Underwriters turned up not one, but three employees named Martha, which gave me three choices as to who had been supplying Yarbo with a list of West Coast policy insurance policy holders. Finding the exact Martha was even easier. On the phone, she had told me that she was calling from the office, and the night elevator operator's in-and-out book showed the signature of one Martha Kinsey, and I just couldn't wait to hear her report. I've got a message from Mr. Yarbo.
Oh, just a minute. Message from James. Oh, what does he want?
Well, what he really wants is to get out of the bathroom. That's where I've got him locked up.
Who are you?
You ought to know who I am. I assume you're the one that told Yarbo he could be expecting a call from an insurance investigator named Dollar. Well, that's me.
Well, I don't care. James told me girls give out lists of names all the time, sell them for mailing lists, 10 cents apiece. May not be ethical, but it's not against the law. James told me, and I believe James. Oh, he's the smartest man I ever knew.
He may be the smartest, but he's right in line to be numbered among the deadest. One of these fine mornings, the state is going to give him a cyanide egg for breakfast.
What do you mean?
You should know. Murder, execution, gas chamber.
Well, you can't prove a thing. James told me so, and he knows. Well, he's smart.
I hope he's not smart enough to pick a lock with a bath mat. Now, come on, sit down. You and I are going to have a nice, long talk.
We are not. I won't say a thing. I don't have to, unless you have a warrant, an indictment, and a court reporter. James told me so.
Yeah, I know. He's smart. But no matter what he told you, you're going to tell me a few things.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Oh, yes, you are.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Oh, yes, you are. So, I was wrong. Martha didn't tell me anything, but her stubborn attitude did. She was in love with Mr. Yarbo, a stupid middle-aged woman having her last fling at romance, doing her best to keep her last chance alive in the person of the man who had made her his partner in crime. As crazy as it was, this grotesque pair of lovebirds created the only real emotion in the case to date and switched my thoughts from the widely scattered deaths which had brought me into the case and over to the single death of Yarbo's wife. Enclosed, find a transcript of statement made to me at 2 o'clock in the morning by the doctor who signed Mrs. Yarbo's death certificate.
Cause of death, cerebral hemorrhage, result of severe fracture of skull. Region, medulla oblongata. Contributing factors, woman bathing in bathtub at home. Slipped and fell, striking head on shower spigot. Coroner's finding death due to misadventure. Accidental.
It took the doctor 2 minutes to get around to making that statement. I figured it would take Martha at least 30 minutes to get her hair out of her curlers and make herself presentable enough to risk being seen on the street. That left me 28 minutes to get back to Yarbo's house before she did, and I didn't need half that long. In the cab on my way over, I took inventory. One, to date, Yarbo's alibis covering him on all the so-called revenge murders had been perfect, too perfect. Second, when I first faced Yarbo, he screamed about his wife's death, not in the light of having lost his lady love, but in the light of having lost her insurance money. Just as my third and most important conclusion came upon me, the taxi came upon our destination, and I had to go to work. Once inside the little horror house on Lombard Street, I got set for a long search. But it turned out to be a short one, and it proved two things. Yarbo was not only a murderer, he was as crazy as he'd acted in having kept the evidence around. Okay, Yarbo. Come on out.
Well, I hope you have enjoyed your waste of time, Mr. Dollar, as I've enjoyed my chance for meditation. You saw Martha, I suppose?
Yes, I saw Martha. Bless her silent little soul.
Yes, I was sure of Martha. She believes in me.
You can say that again. Come on out here.
Mr. Dollar, I suppose you are aware that this is the second time tonight you've been guilty of breaking and entering. I am, however, willing to forgive that should you come to your senses and decide to go back to Hartford and leave me alone. Mind treading on the roses in the rug, Mr. Dollar?
Sorry, Yarbo. I fell for that gag earlier tonight.
People who smile at that joke give me the last laugh.
Now, look, Yarbo, I know exactly what you've been up to, and I know why you've done it. But your little war of nerves has got to stop.
It will never stop. No one can prove anything against me.
I can. I can prove that you haven't done a thing to bring about those accidental deaths you've been taking credit for. Martha has sat down that insurance office and notified you every time there's been an accidental death of a policyholder in this part of the country. And you've written the company your little letters and gotten your little kicks out of it, right?
That's a lie, lie, lie.
That's the switch, a guy yelling that loud that he's guilty.
You'll have to prove it. You will have to prove it.
Don't worry, chum. I'm not going to waste a breath proving murders that you didn't commit. brother. I'm really going to go to town on the one that you did. Your wife, Mr. Yarbo.
Oh, that is the most ridiculous statement you have yet made, young man. Look around you. Take note. I have profited by all the mistakes made by the original owners of these bloody souvenirs from Dr. Crippen on down. You see in me the living composite of them all. And I intend to stay that way. Alive.
I'm afraid you will, but it's going to be inside an upholstered room. And this is what will put you there.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Mr. Yarbo, you carried your little hobby of crime souvenirs too far when you saved this hunk of pipe and the faucet with which you clubbed your wife to death.
She slipped and fell. She was in the tub.
I'm sure the police microscopes can give you a strong argument on that one. Now, come on. And let's make it easy on each other, shall we?
No, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Let go.
Whoa.
Let go of me. You have to prove it.
What's he doing?
Help me, Martha. Help me. Hit him with something.
I'd have bet on myself against the two of them if I didn't have to fight while playing hopscotch over those roses in the carpet, about which I still wasn't quite sure. It was touch and go. Martha would try to touch the back of my head with something, and I'd go.
Do something, Martha! Do something!
I'll fix him!
Something Martha tried to do was pick up a heavy-based urn and aim it at me. She missed. It started to roll across the rosy carpet. When Yarbo saw where it was headed, he wrenched himself loose and dove to the carpet. I dove the other way. He got there just too late. I didn't have to look twice to know he was dead. Fate had called James Yarbo up on his own carpet. When Martha threw that urn at me, it had rolled straight for the only rose in the rug that had been booby-trapped. Which only goes to prove that sometimes a rose by any other name can be anything but sweet. Expense account, item 6, $1.40, 3-month subscription, Love Life magazine, sent to accessory to murder, Martha Kinsey, Tehachapi State Prison. I figured 3 months was about all she had, the judges and juries in California being rather efficient that way. Expense account, item 7, $6, dinner and diving for pearls, in a barrel of blue points at Fisherman's Wharf. Diving for Pearl's earring, which she lost while bending over the barrel trying to see what oysters looked like. Item 8, $176.87. Airfare, San Francisco to Hartford. Expense account total, $942.08. Not including defense lawyer fees if you decide to sue me for not being able to add correctly. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes and stars Charles Russell. Script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Jay Novello, Martha Wentworth, Paul Dubois, C.G. Pearson, and Larry Dobkin. The special music is written and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Be sure to be with us at this same time next week when another unusual expense account is handed in by
yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Everyone is concerned about world affairs these days. If we want world peace, we'll have to have national peace first. In order to keep America's strength and prestige, in order to preserve her freedom, we must do away with group prejudice.
Let's stop judging people by the color of their skin or the place where they worship and start considering them for what they do. We'll be sure to have a happier world. Stay tuned now for Vaughn Monroe and his caravan, following immediately on most of these CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The makers of Camel cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. Why don't you smoke the cigarette so many doctors enjoy?
In a nationwide survey a few years ago, 113,597 doctors were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" The brand name most was Camel.
It was true then, it is true now, because repeated surveys have been made.
And every time, the brand named most has been Camel. Yes, these surveys show that more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Why don't you smoke the cigarette so many doctors enjoy? Now we bring you another transcribed adventure with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency. Mr. Diamond speaking.
Excuse me, I must have the wrong number.
Oh, is that you, Helen?
This is me, Helen.
Oh, well, I thought maybe you might be a client. How are you, dear?
Well, I'm fine, but what's wrong with you?
Wrong?
Yes, what means that Diamond Detective Agency, Mr. Diamond speaking? You usually come on the phone like Roy Rogers and his horse Trigger. How come no slogans?
Well, to tell you the truth, dear, I couldn't think of one this week. Anyway, aren't you the gal who's always after me to get some culture?
This is culture?
Ain't nothing else but. You just want a jaw if you got something important to talk about, hmm?
This is Friday, you know.
Happens every week.
Yes, but this is the Friday when if you haven't got a client by noon, we're going for a drive, remember?
By Jove, that's right.
Well, by Jove, it is now 11:43 and 15 seconds, approximately.
Sounds like someone gave you a new...
What does that broken sentence mean? Client walk in?
Shh, quiet. Don't talk so loud, dear. This one looks like he might scare easily. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you Mr. Diamond?
I am Mr. Diamond. Won't you come in?
Said the spider to the fly. I'll hang up, Rick. Call me back if you have time.
All right, dear. Bye.
Bye.
Well, come in. Come in, Mr.
Walker. Thomas Walker. I do hope I didn't interrupt your conversation, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, it wasn't important. Just my broker calling to tell me I've been wiped out. But enough of me, Mr. Walker. Let's talk about you.
Would it be all right if I sat down? I'm a little nervous this morning.
Well, you do seem a little worked up over something. Sure, sure. Sit down, Mr. Walker. Sit down anywhere at all.
Thank you. Are you engaged, Mr. Diamond?
Well, not yet, but she's working at it. Just between the two of us, I think if I can hold off through the month of June...
Oh, no, Mr. Diamond. I meant, are you working for anyone on a caper, I believe you call them?
Oh. No. We honest and true private detectives just call them cases. As a matter of fact, you're in luck. I am at liberty to listen to your proposal. That is, if you wish to engage me.
Good. It's taken me some time to work up enough courage to come to a private detective. I don't think I could do it again.
I don't think you could either. All right, Mr. Walker, just what is it that's troubling you?
Well, I hope, Mr. Diamond, that it's nothing more than my suspicious mind. Oh, don't misunderstand me. I'm not by nature a suspicious person, but I have stumbled across something that I think should be brought to the attention of the local authorities.
Then why not bring it to the attention of the local authorities?
Well, because... Because I'm afraid they'll laugh at me.
So you want me to go down and let them laugh at me, huh?
Oh, no. At least not right away. Not until after you've confirmed my suspicions or proved them ridiculous. In either event, you will know then what to do.
Well, before you lose me entirely, Mr. Walker, maybe you'd better tell me just what it is you want me to do.
I think the best thing to do is... Yes, I think that would be the best. That way they wouldn't be...
Remember me, Mr. Walker?
Mr. Diamond, I want you to follow someone. Shadow him is a word I believe you use.
Shadow?
Yes. You do that type of work, don't you?
Oh, occasionally, yeah. Just who is it you want me to shadow, Mr. Walker?
Carter, I believe his name is. Joseph Carter. He must be the ringleader.
Oh, this Joseph Carter leads a ring?
Well, as I said, Mr. Diamond, these are only my suspicions. If you're going to laugh at me,
Now, take it easy, Mr. Walker. I'm just trying to get as much information from you as I can. Who is this Carter fellow, and where can I get in touch with him?
He's a chemist. At least he's supposed to be. And I don't want you to get in touch with him, Mr. Diamond. I just want you to follow him. It could be disastrous if you spoke to him about my suspicions.
Mr. Walker, you may not believe this, but I don't even know yet what your suspicions are.
And I think it would be best if I didn't tell you.
Oh.
That way you can form your own opinions about what is going on.
Mr. Walker, this is getting tougher as you go along. I don't even know where to find this Joseph Carter.
I have that all arranged, Mr. Diamond. Rather clever plan, too, if I do say so myself. Uh-huh. You see, I'm meeting him for lunch, and he thinks we're going to talk about his wife.
By Jove, that is clever.
Yes, isn't it? Now, after lunch, that will be around 1 o'clock, I'll drop him off on the corner of First and Elm. Do you know where that is?
Uh-huh.
Good. Now, my car is a blue Essex sedan. When you see it pull around the corner, you be prepared to follow whoever steps out.
Oh, gosh, I haven't done this since the correspondence school sent me my diploma. All right, Mr. Walker, what happens then?
Then, Mr. Diamond, you stay with him night and day. You do have operators who work in shifts, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Oh, good. Now, the important thing is to impress upon your men the seriousness of what they're doing. Under no condition are they to let him out of their sight.
Oh, that's a cinch. Couldn't you give us something a little harder, like following four people at the same time?
Well, no. One of them might get suspicious, Mr. Diamond, and that wouldn't do.
Oh.
Now, about your money.
Oh, yes, by all means. My fee is $100 a day in expenses, Mr. Walker. And believe me, you're going to have some...
$100? Isn't that a little steep?
It's too much, Mr. Walker?
Well, no, I suppose not. I'll have to write you out a check. Will $300 be enough? That'll pay you up till Monday.
Well, yes.
By then, you will have cracked this thing. Or written me off as a suspicious old fool.
Now, Mr. Walker, think how few private detectives there would be if no one listened to their client's suspicions.
There you are, Mr. Diamond.
Yes.
And here is my card. Both my business and home phone numbers are on it.
Oh, fine. All right, thank you. Walker Plumbing Company? You, Mr. Walker, are a plumber?
Yes. It is surprising, isn't it?
I smiled at him as he went out and then called Helen and broke the sad news. She pouted a little, I cooed a little, and then we both hung up feeling very good inside. I had an hour to kill, so I decided to get a little fresh air. I was half a block from my office building when a whole ounce of imported perfume floated out of a doorway. It circled around a while and finally settled over my eyes. What I could see through the haze would have caused any airline pilot to come in for an emergency landing. And even though I don't fly myself, I put the flaps down and kind of slowed up a little.
Why, Mr. Diamond, I do believe you're staring.
Oh, sorry. Do I know you, please?
No, Mr. Diamond, it isn't that good. And of course you know me.
Oh, I do, huh? Oh, sure, I remember now. Monte Carlo, wasn't it? Only you were a blonde then, with the moonlight behind you, making a halo for your lovely head, and I'm just ad-libbing, so get me out of this. Who are you, lady?
Sandra Browning. And it wasn't Monte Carlo. Come on, I'll buy you a drink and refresh your memory.
All right. But I hope we can cover everything in an hour. There's quite a bit of you to cover, isn't there?
Heaps. Much too much to run through in an hour. You're working on a case, then?
Ah, the luck of Ricky Diamond. Yes, Miss Browning, I am in the midst of what my client calls a caper. Go on the payroll at 1 o'clock.
I see. And just who is your client, Ricky?
We were going to talk about you, remember?
Oh, but I'm so dull, Mr. Diamond, and you're so fascinating.
Ah, true, yes.
This place look all right?
Fine, fine.
Intimate, isn't it, Mr. Diamond?
Oh. Say, just how well do we know each other?
Can't you tell?
Honey, right now I probably couldn't even tell you my name. And, I'm beginning to need that drink more and more. Shall we go mingle with those strangers, stranger? As we walked over to a table, I shook my head a few times to clear it and get out of the danger zone of the perfume. I knew I'd never seen Miss Browning before. No, not that I've led a sheltered life, but something like her only happens once, and it usually costs an awful lot of money. Money I've never had. So, naturally, the same applied to Miss Browning. So, with renewed vigor and a firm grip on my wallet, I sat down beside her.
Cozy?
Too cozy. I'm a sort of a wide-open spaces man myself, and I... Oh, a couple of martinis. George?
George.
Now, about you, Miss B. Where was it our paths first crossed?
No, Mr. D, I've changed my mind. I'm going to make you guess. It'll be more fun that way.
Oh, and it will also be a long winter. Now, if we're going to get anything accomplished, maybe you better start talking. An hour goes pretty fast.
What happens in an hour that's so terribly important, Mr. Diamond?
A guess.
I don't want to guess. I want you to tell me.
You know, we may run out of things to talk about in a minute now.
Not if you tell me what I want to know.
Mm-mm.
All right, I'll take a guess. Does this case have anything to do with, say, a bank?
Well, you tell me. Does it have something to do with, say, a bank?
You're fighting me, Mr. Diamond.
Well, who's fighting who? All I'm trying to find out is whether...
You're going to wish, Mr. Diamond, that you had talked to me.
Well, well. Conversation seems to have picked up a little. But we might as well save your breath, Sandra. I ain't talking and you ain't talking.
So, if you'll excuse me, I have to make a telephone call.
All of which left me with still a half hour to kill. I paid the check and then dropped by the Fifth Precinct to say hello to Walt Levinson. He was sleeping, so I tiptoed back out and headed for the corner of First and Elm. I'd been there about 5 minutes when a guy whose face looked vaguely familiar came up and said...
Excuse me, is this a bus stop?
No, but there's a cab stand a block down the street.
Oh, thanks. I might have stood here for 3 days.
How's that?
I saw you waiting around, so I figured it was a bus stop. Guess I'll have to take a cab now. Say, if you're waiting for one, maybe we can split the fare.
No, thanks. Funny. I'd swear you were hanging around the Fifth Precinct when I came up.
Oh? How long ago?
About 15 minutes.
Well, come to think of it, it's possible that you did. I went in to pay a traffic fine. Yeah.
Is that right? Speeding, was it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it was. Those things do happen, you know.
Oh, yes, yes. Of course, the really interesting part about all this is that the Fifth Precinct doesn't accept traffic fines.
Huh?
You have to go all the way downtown to pay them.
You're kind of a smart aleck, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Life of the party. Just give me a lampshade and a bustle, and I'm a...
Hey, what's the idea?
A car spun around the corner just as the guy shoved me. I landed in the street, but rolled over in time to see the front door open and a body come spilling out, sliding to a stop against the curb. The guy with the phony ticket hopped on the running board, and the blue Essex sedan lost itself in the uptown traffic. Now, all I could do was sit there and look at the crumbled form lying in the gutter. Mr. Thomas Walker had given me a check for $300. That was to last until Monday. For Mr. Walker, Monday was just 2 days too many.
Before we continue with Richard Diamond, here are a few words about smoking enjoyment. After all the cigarette mildness tests, including the famous 30-day Camel test,
Camel leads all other brands by billions.
Here's how you can make your own 30-day Camel test. A sensible test of cigarette mildness based on steady smoking.
Smoke Camels and Camels only for the next 30 days. In other words, go steady with Camels for 30 days. Pack after pack, week after week.
Here's what you'll find out from your own 30-day Camel test.
You'll see how rich, how flavorful Camels are pack after pack. You'll discover how well Camels get along with your throat week after week.
That does sound like a sensible way to judge a cigarette, doesn't it? So why not start your own 30-day Camel test tonight? It won't take you long to find out why Camel leads all other cigarettes in popularity by billions of cigarettes per year.
How mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see. Smoke Camels and see.
And now, back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
They abandoned the car about four blocks down the street, Rick. Too bad you didn't get a look at the guy behind the wheel.
Everything happened too fast, Walt.
Yeah. You feel all right now?
Yeah, just swell.
I guess the idea of all this is that somebody figured you and Walker knew too much.
Yep.
That doesn't make sense either, Rick. You said Walker wouldn't tell you a thing.
No, but he gave me $300. Between now and Monday, I'm going to try to earn it.
I could use the help. You got any idea who was gunning for him?
No, not exactly. But whoever it was kept pretty close tabs. He was followed to my office.
He tell you that?
Uh-uh.
Then how do you know?
Well, indirectly, a girl named Sandra Browning did. She said something else that's kind of kicking around in the back of my head, too.
Sandra Browning. That's the brunette you told me about?
Yeah, she seemed to think Walker said something to me about a bank.
But he didn't.
Nope, but that's what makes it so interesting. Drop me off at that drugstore, will you, Walt? I want to look up a phone number.
Sandra?
Uh-uh. A fellow named Joseph Carter.
Who's he?
Supposed to be a chemist. Walker told me about him. Well, thanks for the lift, Fatty. If anything happens, I'll get in touch with you. Mr. Carter?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Well, I'm a private detective. May I come in? I'd like to talk to you.
You, mean about my wife, Mr.,
Diamond. Oh. Richard Diamond. What about your wife, Mr. Carter?
Well, nothing. I merely supposed. I mean, after all, you said you were a private detective.
Oh, yes, yes. But I don't handle divorce cases, Mr. Carter.
Oh, I see. Then what,
I just want to ask you a couple of questions about a plumber named Walker. Thomas Walker. Do you know him?
A plumber? Now, that's strange. Mr. Walker called me on the phone this morning and asked me to meet him for lunch. He said it was important to me that I be there.
Were you?
Well, yes, I was. That is, I was at the appointed place at the proper hour, but this Mr. Walker never did make an appearance.
Oh, I see. You said this Mr. Walker. Does that mean you didn't know him?
Not to my knowledge. The voice didn't register and the name wasn't familiar. This is very interesting, Mr. Diamond. Would you like some coffee? I'll ring for the house.
No, thanks. If you didn't know Walker, Mr. Carter, why did you agree to have lunch with him?
Well, for several reasons. As I told you, he said it was important to me, and since I was going to be downtown anyway...
That isn't good enough, Mr. Carter.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand.
Thomas Walker was killed less than an hour ago. You say you were supposed to have lunch with him. That puts you in a suspicious position.
Yes, I see. So that's what this is about. How did you get my name, Mr. Diamond?
Oh, that isn't important. What I want to know is why you agreed to have lunch with someone you didn't even know.
Well, this Walker fellow, he said some things over the phone.
What kind of things?
About my wife. He said it would be to my advantage to meet him and discuss it. Under these circumstances, I had nothing to lose, so I agreed.
Under what circumstances?
Well, you see, Mr. Diamond, my wife and I are... Well, we're drifting apart. Mm-hmm. She's been seen with another man, a fellow named Dave Johnson.
Dave Johnson? Who's he?
Chap I sold my shop to when I retired last month. He and...
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know you had company.
Well, come in. Come in, Sandra. We were just...
No, no, I won't disturb you. Go right ahead.
Oh, yes, yes, come in. This is my wife, Sandra. Come in, dear, come in.
I'd rather not.
Oh, it's all right. I was leaving anyway. Come right in, Mrs. Carter, isn't it?
Lieutenant Levinson.
Anything break, Fatty?
Nothing but my head. I've been doing some thinking, Rick.
Well, since you've already pulled the punchline, go ahead.
What? Oh, look, Rick, you said this Sandra Browning...
Carter. Browning's a phony.
You know, someday you're going to meet a girl who gives you a right name and you won't know how to react. That's the trouble with guys.
As soon as you finish the discourse, Fatty, we get back to the plot. What have you been thinking?
Well, you said that this Miss Carter...
It's Mrs. Carter, Walt.
Will you stop that? I don't care if it's Mrs. Whippenpiffel. I want to know what she said. She did say something about a bank, didn't she?
She did.
Yeah, and you said something about a guy named Joseph Carter who's a chemist.
Walt, so help me, if you tell me they're married, I'll throw this phone from here to the Fifth Precinct.
You do, and you'll never find out the startling news I'm about to unfold.
All right, unfold.
It's better. On the corner of First and Elm, on the very corner where you nearly met your demise, there is a bank.
That's very interesting.
You're darn tootin'. Right next door to this bank is a small shop with a sign painted on the window. Pretty good sign, too. Somebody took a lot of pains with it.
Walt, I...
All right. Maybe it doesn't mean anything, but the sign says Carter Chemistry Corporation.
Oh, that's what you've been thinking about.
Yeah. Only now it's even more interesting because of this Sandra Browning Carter girl. It's a definite connection.
Uh-huh. With Walker, the plumber, making the connection. Well, thanks, Walt, and, bye.
Oh, hello.
Hello. I'm looking for Mr. Carter. Is he in?
Ain't nobody here but me, and I'm getting ready to leave.
Closing up a little early, aren't you? It's only 4:00. Oh, I see you're doing a little repair work in the back of the shop there.
Yeah, I had a little explosion in there a couple of days ago.
Oh, must have ripped up a little plumbing down that close to the floor.
Yeah, we're getting it fixed up. Sorry to rush out like this, buddy, but you know how it is. Friday afternoon, weekend coming up, you know.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, when you see Mr. Carter, just tell him Horace Crutchmeyer was in to see him. He'll understand.
Horace, well, tell you the truth, Horace, Mr. Carter don't come around here no more. He's retired. Sold out everything, lock, stock, and test tube.
Oh, is that so? Well, I'll get in touch with him at home. See you.
Yeah, see ya, Horace.
You know, this could turn out kind of silly, Rick. What if they don't show up?
Oh, they'll show, Fatty. I checked the floor plan of both buildings. Got it figured they'll break through about here.
How many of them do you think there'll be?
Just 3. If they knocked off Walker because he got suspicious, they won't cut anybody else in.
Is Carter in on this, Rick? It's his chemistry shop, isn't it?
No, not anymore. He sold out to a guy named Dave Johnson. You'll meet him as soon as they blast the ball out here.
The one I'm anxious to meet is this Sandra Browning Carter. Sounds like quite a dish.
Not my type, Walt. I like him a little more tender.
What's the other guy's name, the one who shoved Walker out of the car?
Don't know yet. I met him in the shop this afternoon. Well, you'll like him, too. He's got sort of an ingrown face.
You know, you got to hand it to him, Rick. It's a pretty slick stunt they're pulling. I in the shop next door to a bank, digging through the wall, and...
Shit. There they are, Walt. Maybe we'd better get over here.
Right.
What'd I tell you? You ever see anything so easy in your life?
Dave, does he have to keep talking? Can't you make
him keep quiet? Look, both of you knock it off and let's get busy, huh? We've only got till tomorrow morning.
Hit the lights, Rick.
Okay.
Hey, who's... Well.
By you...
Now, play it smart. We don't want to carry anyone out of here.
Oh, is this the bank you were talking about, Sandra? Still not talking, huh?
She doesn't look like much to me, Rick.
Now, Walt, don't be catty. Remember, she's been a very busy girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that they're broken in on this kind of work, I guess they won't mind it so much for the next few years.
But, Rick?
Hmm?
Why did Walker want you to follow Joseph Carter? He didn't have anything to do with this, did he?
No, but Walker thought he did. He tumbled to what was going on when he went in to repair the plumbing. Naturally, he figured Carter was behind it. Ain't I getting smarter as the months go by?
And speaking of months going by...
Yes, dear?
It will soon be June, you know.
June? Now there's a month to conjure with.
Oh, do you mean it, Rick?
Well, sure, June must be about my favorite. Let's see now. Don't I know a song with June in it?
Oh, Rick.
Let's see. June. Kind of a strange name to me, but, well, this might do it. Oh, it's a long, long while from May to December. But the days grow short when you reach September. When the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame, one hasn't got time for the waiting game. Oh, the days tumble down to a precious few. September, November, and these few precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend with you.
You faker, you. There wasn't a single June anywhere in that song.
Come to think of it, there wasn't.
You want to try again?
I guess not.
Something else you'd rather do?
Honey, what an opening that is. Come here.
Now, that's what I've been waiting for. More.
More?
More?
Honey, stop. If this keeps up, I won't be able to hold off till June.
Dick Powell will return in just a moment.
What's America's most popular cigarette?
Camel is in the lead by billions of cigarettes per year.
One reason is Camel's rich, full flavor, a flavor no other cigarette has.
And another reason is Camel's pack after pack, week after week mildness.
Tonight, start enjoying the one cigarette America enjoys most. It's Camel, of course.
Yes, of all the cigarettes on the market today, Camel is in the lead by billions of cigarettes per year.
How mild, how mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Smoke Camels and see.
Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to bring a little extra cheer and comfort to our hospitalized servicemen and veterans, the makers of Camels send them thousands of packs of gift Camels every week. This week, the gift Camels go to Veterans Hospitals, Clarksburg, West Virginia, and Miles City, Montana, U.S. Naval Hospital, Corona, California, U.S. Army Station Hospital, Carlisle Barracks, Pennsylvania, the Military Air Transport Service, which evacuates virtually all overseas wounded personnel. Now, until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
Tonight's Adventure of Richard Diamond was written by Ty Cobb with music by Frank Worth. Virginia Gregg was heard as Helen Asher and Alan Reed as Lieutenant Walt Levinson. Others in the cast were Bob Griffin, Joyce Manners, Sidney Miller, and Jim Backus. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. Be sure to listen to another great Camel show, Vaughn Monroe and the Camel Caravan, every Saturday night. If you're ever asked who's the most obliging taxpayer, vote for yourself if you're a cigarette smoker, because you and 60 million others pay more than a 50% tax on the cigarettes you smoke. Yes, every time you buy a pack of cigarettes, you pay the federal government 8 cents, and most of you pay 3 or 4 cents more in state or city cigarette taxes on that pack.
That means that better than half the price you pay for cigarettes goes for tax. Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell.
Now stay tuned for This Is Your FBI, followed immediately by Ozzie and Harriet over most of these stations.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. In between now and then, there's more old-time radio at relicradio.com. You'll find past episodes of this podcast there, alongside links to all the other shows. Also a shoutcast stream, which you can listen to even more old-time radio over, and a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make this all possible. Thank you very much to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.